Professor Dumbledore has granted me permission to start this little dueling club.
And with that, welcome to the Dueling Club, learning one spell at a time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Dueling Club podcast. This is Jen. And
I'm Al.
We love you. Thank you for coming back. Or if you've never been here before, we love you already. Welcome.
You are getting things on your phone.
No, it's my watch telling me that I need to go get the laundry, but I've already did that.
Watches are fancy.
Yeah, my watch is fancy. Because I'm just one of those technological people and now I have to set the other alarm. Anyway, so what's going on with you?
Nothing.
That's not true.
What do you want? We've been watching House.
We have. But no, I meant what has been going on with you since the last podcast. You finally finished editing the last chapter of your book?
Uh-huh.
And how's the editor's notes coming along? Like, is she rereading now?
I don't know. I'm waiting for her to respond to my email.
Okay, then. See, that's something. And guys, I went to the doctor and got medicine and stuff. And as you can tell, I sound a little bit better. I feel a little bit better. So that's always good. Yay! So, Al?
What?
What are we doing today?
This is episode 11 for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, chapter 16 and 17, the finale for the book.
This is true. I like how you did that. It sounded very professional. Good job.
I say things.
You say things. You do. You cook and you say things.
Yes. I also like cookies.
I like cookies.
Yes.
I want cookies right now. Thanks for mentioning cookies.
We're not going out to buy cookies again.
Do we have any cookies left over?
There are no cookies left
over. Damn it.
We didn't even have cookies, really. We had brownies and but...
Not the vanilla wafers. They're like vanilla wafer cookies. Whatever. You know what I mean.
Well, Mom had them this morning.
How dare she?
Thief! Okay.
It's fine.
So,
chapter 16, Through the Trap Door. Harry kind of half expects Voldemort to come bursting through the door at any moment. But even though he expects this, nothing much has changed at Hogwarts since the last thing that happened with Quirrell, where Quirrell run in with who we believe was Snape. We are currently right before exams, and we find out that exams at Hogwarts occur in two parts. There's a written part and a practical part.
Yes.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. The written part occurs in a large, sweltering, hot classroom with new bewitched anti-cheating quills. And the practical exams are done in each teacher's classroom. So, at least for the first years. So my thing is, what first year, or which first years, have actually tried cheating?
Are you really going to ask this question?
Yeah.
Do you think
it was the Weasley twins?
Wow. Thank you. You've answered your own question there.
You be quiet. But I'm sure it had to have been something that was in place before then.
Well, I'm sure there's always someone who's trying to be slick because they didn't feel like studying for some ungodly reason.
True.
So, there you go.
Okay. So, just a little info. Professor Flitwick has them try to make a pineapple tap dance across a desk. I mean, I like pineapples. I like tap dancing. That makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Professor McGonagall has them turn a mouse into a snuff box. And it says that she gives them extra points. Really, phone? It says she gives them extra points for how cute it is, but takes off points if it still has whiskers.
That's fair.
I know, right? I don't want a snuff box with whiskers. Do we even know what a snuff box is?
I think it's like a box where you put like tissues into or something.
Okay.
I'm assuming. I don't know.
Okay, I'll look that up in a sec. Hold on. Snuff box. What is that? Google machine, tell me. What is a snuff box used for? Because, you know, I should have looked this before. Oh, a snuff box is a smokeless tobacco box. That's weird.
I feel like that's not something that she'd make them work on. I feel like it's something else, but...
Okay, whatever. We'll figure it out.
We'll go with it. Okay. Professor McGonagall's a hooligan. Continue.
And Snape has them create a forgetfulness potion while he hovers over them and makes them ridiculously uncomfortable.
As per usual.
Yeah. So I also wonder how many students would actually do better on their practical potions exam if Snape wasn't such a jerk.
I mean, probably everyone.
Yeah. Except for, like, Malfoy. Because Malfoy is just going to do how he does. And Snape tends to like Malfoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. First cough. Harry manages well enough, even though he has stabbing pains in his forehead that are distracting him. And he's had them... They've been bothering him since his Forbidden Forest detention. He's also having trouble sleeping because of the usual nightmare that's now made worse by a hooded figure that's dripping blood. I mean,
that's fun. That's
scary and wonderful. Hermione and Ron seem to not be too concerned about Voldemort or the stone at the moment, which, I mean, that's great for them. Must well,
their,
be nice.
Their reasoning is because Dumbledore is still around, so it doesn't really matter. Nothing can happen.
Yeah, but at least the least they could do is be like, oh man, Harry, that really sucks. Instead of kind of being like, no, we're good. Harry can't ignore it because of his dreams and his forehead pain. So, I mean, to me, this is a good example of how people can have trouble relating or empathizing when they aren't experiencing the same set of circumstances.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. So after finishing their exams, the trio is outside, stretched out on the grass, enjoying their time, a nice lovely day in the week before their exam results are available. But Harry's scar is hurting again. Hermione suggests he goes to Madame Pomfrey, but Harry isn't sick, so that's really not going to be helpful.
If he's not sick, there's nothing she can do.
Yeah. So why suggest it? In my opinion, that's just Hermione being like, oh, the teachers and the people here, the authority figures here, are totally going to help us. And it's like, but Snape. So your argument falls through.
Yeah. And then Harry's mind, he feels like something isn't right, that there's something that he should have already figured out, or something that's just like lingering at the edges of his consciousness, like what is wrong? There's something wrong here. He thinks about Hagrid, and it's like a switch is flipped. I can't English. And they rush off to Hagrid's cabin while Ron and Hermione are like, what's going on? And Hagrid's outside of his cabin. What is he doing? Is he? I think in the movie he's like carving something. I don't know.
Yeah, in the movie he's carving something. In the book, I am trying to get there, and it took me a second to scroll because I have the digital copy while you have my physical copy right now. But anyway, Harry basically starts asking him a bunch of questions.
He's shelling peas into a large bowl.
Okay.
So, Hagrid offers them drinks. Ron says yes. Harry says no, I have a question to ask you. And it basically goes something like this. No, we're in a hurry, Hagrid. I've got to ask you something. You know that night you won Norbert? What did the stranger you were playing cards with look like? Dunno, said Hagrid casually. He wouldn't take his cloak off. He saw the three of them look stunned and raised his eyebrows. It's not that unusual. You get a lot of funny folk in the Hogshead. That's the pub down in the village. Might have been a dragon dealer.
That's one of the pubs.
Well, yeah, but no one... You know, until three, and he doesn't say that. He just says that it's the pub.
Yeah. Well, spoilers. It says it right here.
Yeah, but it doesn't say it in here. I'm literally looking at the book. It's the pub. Read it.
Really?
I read it word for word. It's the pub.
Oh. So apparently our version is... Oh, because I'm reading Sorcerer's Stone and you're reading Philosopher's Stone right there.
They're basically the same. They're not gonna...
But that's actually a first printing.
Yeah, so. I guess. Maybe they went back and were like, Tain is this word.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Might have been a dragon dealer, mightn't he? I never saw his face. He kept his hood up. Harry sank down next to the bowl of peas. What did you talk to him about, Hagrid? Did you mention Hogwarts at all? Might have come up, said Hagrid, frowning as he tried to remember. Yeah, he asked what I did, and I told him I was a gamekeeper here. He asked a bit about the sort of creatures I look after, so I told him, and I said what I'd always really wanted was a dragon. And then, I can't remember too well, because he kept buying me drinks. Let's see. Yeah. Then he said that he had a dragon egg, and we could play cards for it if I wanted. But he had to see if I could handle it. He didn't want it to go to any old home. So I told him, after Fluffy, a dragon would be easy. And did he seem interested in Fluffy? Harry asked, trying to keep his voice calm. Well, yeah, how many three-headed dogs do you meet, even around Hogwarts? So I told him, Fluffy's a piece of cake if you know how to calm him down. Just play him a bit of music and he'll go straight off to sleep. Hagrid suddenly looked horrified. I shouldn't have told you that, he blurted out. Forget I said it. Hey, where are you going?
Yeah, that's a problem. A little bit.
So he basically just admitted that he doesn't know who he got the egg from, and he told him how to get past Fluffy, which to the trio is one of the only enchantments that Snape can't get through.
Right. So they actually run off.
So the only thing now protecting the stone is the fact that Dumbledore is at the school, and if anything were to happen, Dumbledore can fly into action.
Yeah. So they head for Dumbledore's office, only to realize they don't even really know where it is.
As if there's a sign that points to it.
Love that. Of course. And they almost literally run into Professor McGonagall holding a bunch of books. And she tells them, well, they're like, oh, we need to see Dumbledore. And she's like, well, Dumbledore's not here. He left for London after receiving an urgent owl from the Ministry of Magic. And they're like, but we need to talk to him. Mm-hmm. So you need to talk to him about something that's more important than what the ministry needs?
And then Harry, throwing caution to the wind,
decides to tell the truth.
And reveals that they know about the stone. And McGonagall is shocked, completely dropping everything she's holding.
I'm sure she's thinking, how could these three kids, two of them are 12 and one of them is 11, Harry's still 11, mm-hmm. how in God's green earth did they figure this out? Mm-hmm. How in Merlin's beard did they figure this out?
Yeah, and though she's highly suspicious of what they've just said, she, you know, tells them that no one can steal the stone. It's too highly protected. Which, I mean...
Sure.
Okay.
Let's go with it. If McGonagall says it, for now, let's believe it.
So McGonagall thinks that instead of worrying about the stone, they should go out, back outside, to enjoy their day. And she leaves.
Yeah.
Well, Harry realizes that Dumbledore has been lured away. And that Snape's going after the stone that night. And happy times, because again, when bad things happen, Snape appears.
I swear he has radar for bad things. He's like, everything's great. Wait, I sense a disturbance in the forest. Let me go.
Yeah, exactly. He's like a baddie Yoda.
Yeah, seriously.
So they're discussing how Snape is going to go for the stone tonight while Dumbledore's away. Mm-hmm. And I think Hermione turns around and right in her face is Snape.
Yeah. And he's like, what are you guys doing in here? And none of them can really answer.
Yeah, like, shouldn't you be outside this beautiful day after having finished your exams?
Yeah, and none of them can really answer, so he's like, yeah, get up out of here. And then he specifically says to Harry, but he calls him Potter. Mm-hmm. Like, he calls everybody else kind of by their names.
Not really, no. He always calls him Mr. Weasley.
Yeah, but he says Mr. Weasley. For Harry, it's always Potter. It's never really Mr. Potter. It's always Potter.
Like, yeah, but he also like calls... He calls Draco by his first name.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, he does.
A lot of the time. He does call him Malfoy every once in a while, but it's
mostly He also calls Draco. Hermione Granger. I don't think he actually calls... I have to see how he addresses people. But
we're going to have to check.
It's the way that he kind of like spits out Harry's name.
It's venomous. Potter. Like, yeah.
I don't know. It's always like a very negative.
Yeah. And when they're leaving, when the trio's leaving, he actually warns Harry.
No more nighttime adventures.
no nighttime adventures, or else he's personally going to see to Harry being expelled. And it's like, all right, so on top of being creepy and annoying, now what? Can you read minds?
He's just a douche.
Yeah, a little bit. A lot bit. Whatever.
So they decide to try to run interference. Mm-hmm. Harry and Ron try to make their way to the third floor corridor. Mm-hmm. Hermione has been tasked with trying to keep an eye on Snape by going to the teacher's lounge kind of thing, the teacher's office.
And looking for Flitwick.
Her excuse is to look for Flitwick, but again, she's just looking for Snape.
To go over her exam.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, doesn't pay off, doesn't work. Before they even get to the third floor corridor, when they're very, very close, McGonagall finds them.
And is like, what are you doing here?
Is angry now because they've ignored her warning and they've decided to take it into their own hands to try and protect the stone. And her thing is like, all the teachers are protecting it and you're telling me that you first years can do it?
She threatens them with taking away even more points from Gryffindor.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we're going.
50 more points. And Ron's like, okay, bye.
Yeah. And they go back to the common room and Harry's like, well, at least Hermione is still keeping an eye on Snape. And again,
as if bad news summons these events, she comes to the porthole saying that Snape had found her outside of the room. And she, again, her excuse is looking for Flitwick. And personally found Flitwick for her.
And then he disappears.
Yep.
Not literally, he just goes away.
What a magical being.
I know, right?
So, that's it. They have to... Well, Harry feels like now he has to go and stop Snape. There is no other choice. And Ron and Hermione are totally against it. Mm-hmm. You know, if Harry's found, he's almost 100% going to be expelled. And Harry doesn't care. It's not about being expelled anymore. So I'm going to read this a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. You're mad, said Ron. You can't. You can't, said Hermione. After what McGonagall and Snape have said, you'll be expelled.
Hold on. Yes. That was amazing. Keep going.
Oh, I channeled Emma Watson for a second. Okay.
You did.
So what, Harry yelled. Don't you understand? If Snape gets hold of the stone, Voldemort's coming back. Haven't you heard what it was like when he was trying to take over? There won't be any Hogwarts to get expelled from. He'll flatten it, or turn it into a school for the dark arts. Losing points doesn't matter anymore, can't you see? Do you think he'll leave you and your families alone if Gryffindor wins the House Cup? If I get caught before I can get to the stone, well, I'll have to go back to the Dursleys and wait for Voldemort to find me there. It's only dying a bit later than I would have, because I'm never going to the dark side. I'm going through that trap door tonight, and nothing you two say is going to stop me. Voldemort killed my parents, remember? He glared at them. You're right, Harry, said Hermione in a small voice. I'll use the invisibility cloak, said Harry. It's just lucky I got it back.
Luck or plan? And
that was like a Hermione.
Kermit. It was. Are you Kermit the Frog now?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
it wasn't Kermit at all, by the way. Yeah.
So, Harry tries to be like, oh, I'm going to do this alone. And Ron and Hermione are like, nah, dude.
There's not a chance.
There's no way you're going to get through all of this by
yourself. It's literally the next line. It's like, do you think the three of us can fend the cloak? And he's like, the three of us? And he's like, come off it. You know we're going with you.
Like, come on. Yeah. So, they decide to go together all under the invisibility cloak. They wait in the common room where no one bothers them because everybody's still angry with them.
Yeah. So which tonight is a good thing.
Yes. They wait until they think everyone's left and Harry goes back up to the dormitory. Well,
specifically, Lee Jordan, for some reason, is a night owl and waits until the wee hours of who knows when.
He's Weasley's friend. Mm. The Weasley twins' friend. It makes sense. They're weird.
Were they plotting mischief? I don't... Okay.
They might be. You never know.
True.
Okay. It is Fred and George. So, Harry goes back up to the dormitory to grab the cloak and the flute that Hagrid gave him. And I think it's cute that he's like, because I don't really feel much up to singing right now.
That's fair. I never want to sing, so that's a lie.
That's not true. I heard you singing earlier.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Continue.
I was sitting right here.
No, you were hallucinating. It's fine.
Whatever. And I want to read this one.
And mind you, Hermione was also, like, scouring her books to try and find something to help them the whole time. Oh, yeah. For hours, because it's a crazy thing to... If you contextualize it, like, you're in high school, and your teachers have set up tests that can stump adults, and it's like, hey, you three freshmen, go and finish these tests and ace them.
Not even freshmen. If you're high school teachers,
it's just an analogy
for middle schoolers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Harry ran back down to the common room, and they're about to put the cloak on because Ron is like, "Hey, we should put it on here instead of out there to minimize getting caught." When they hear, "What are you doing?" said a voice from the corner of the room. Neville appeared from behind an armchair, clutching Trevor the Toad, who looked as though he'd be making another bid for freedom. Nothing, Neville, nothing, said Harry, hurriedly putting the cloak behind his back. Neville stared at their guilty faces. You're going out again, he said. No, 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 said Hermione. No, we're not. Why don't you go to bed, Neville? Seriously, like that's going to convince him they're not doing anything?
Wow, you guys are really, really good at hiding things.
Yeah. Harry looked at the grandfather clock by the door. They couldn't afford to waste any more time. Snape might even now be playing Fluffy to sleep. You can't go, said Neville. You'll be caught again. Gryffindor will be in even more trouble. You don't understand, said Harry. This is important. But Neville was clearly steeling himself to do something desperate. I won't let you do it, he said, hurrying to stand in front of the portrait hole. I'll fight you. Neville, Ron exploded, get away from that hole and don't be an idiot. That's harsh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Don't you call me an idiot, said Neville. I don't think you should be breaking any more rules, and you are the one who told me to stand up to people. Yes, but not to us, said Ron in exasperation. Neville, you don't know what you're doing. He took a step forward, and Neville dropped Trevor the Toad, who leapt out of sight. Go on, then. Try and hit me, said Neville, raising his fists. I'm ready. Harry turned to Hermione. Do something, he said desperately. Hermione stepped forward. Neville, she said, I'm really, really sorry about this. She raised her wand. Petrificus Totalus, she cried, pointing it at Neville.
You said it too daintily.
Well, because Hermione's a little dainty.
I don't know.
Right now.
Malfoy would say otherwise in two books.
Well, I mean right now. I mean right now.
I'm sneaky.
Okay, you are. Hermione cursed Neville with the full body bind curse for refusing to allow them to leave.
You know when you say something that you think is like very interesting, you do like little pauses? She hit him with the full body bind curse. You do that all the time.
You shut it. Anyway. Okay. So poor Neville, these are his friends, right? Or these are the people he thinks are his friends. And they told him to stand up for himself. And when he does, they punish him for it. That kind of sucks.
He probably feels like fairly betrayed right now.
Yeah, but he can't move, so, I mean...
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but they had to. They don't really have time to sort of go over this long, crazy theory that has no... like, substantiating information, just all conjecture. It's like, we think this is what's happening, so please trust us, you know? So it's not going to work.
Hopefully they feel like they might be able to tell him about it later. Maybe. If they, you know, survive. Trouble?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay. All right. And...
So they head for the third floor corridor to get to the stone.
Mm-hmm.
They... come across Peeves, and he's like, should tell Filch that something is creeping about.
Invisible.
Yeah. And Harry has the...
It's Ron.
No, it's Harry.
I believe it's Ron.
It's Harry.
Okay, we're gonna fight about this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, keep going. I will look it up.
I'm looking it up, too. No, 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 it's important. What we're talking about is... Harry had a sudden idea.
Fine, you win.
I know, I win.
Hold on a second. I will admit that you were right.
Of course I'm right.
Okay, you were right this time.
Go back.
No. You were right this time. I concede.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
Again, Peeves.
Yes.
Harry has a great idea to pretend to be the Bloody Baron, being invisible, going about his ghastly business. And Peeves just proves that he actually is afraid of the Baron. That's not just like a thing that is between the ghosts. He actually is like, oh, your bloody baroness, I'm sorry, I'll leave you now. Yeah, kind of thing. And he runs off. Well, flies off. And so they get to the door.
He says, hope your business goes well, Baron. I'll not bother you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cute. Okay. So they finally get to the off-limits corridor and start their intense trip into the Philosopher's Stone chambers.
We're just going to call it Fluffy's room.
Fluffy's chambers.
Not like Fluffy's room. They made it to Fluffy's room.
And they find the door ajar, and Harry's like, that's it. Snape got here before us.
Mm-hmm.
Crap.
And there's a harp.
There is a harp that was clearly used to lull Fluffy to sleep.
Yes.
And they're like, oh my gosh, he's going to wake up any minute. So Harry starts playing the flute.
Mm-hmm.
And they figure out how they're going to get down the trap door.
By just jumping.
But Harry hands the flute to Hermione because they decide that he's going to go first.
Mm-hmm.
So Harry goes down and he's like, yeah, come on down. I landed on something soft. We're good.
So Ron next.
Ron next and then Hermione.
Who, when she lands, well, they discuss, oh, how lucky it is for this soft thing to be here. And Hermione lands and she's like, what? This isn't, she screams this like and fights off vines that are trying to ensnare her legs.
Because they're in Devil's Snare.
Well, we don't know that yet. Well, there's a plant. I know, but she says that in like a second.
Yes.
So they have this plant who is like who is entangling and snaring and trying to kill them, but they just haven't even realized it yet. And she pulls away and is like, oh, I've heard of this before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Devil's Snare.
And she says she remembers that it loves things damp and dark.
Yes, yeah, so light a fire. This is the
funny thing. I have it right there. It says, so light a fire, Harry choked. Yes, of course, but there's no wood, Hermione cried, wringing her hands. Have you gone mad? Ron bellowed. Are you a witch or not? Oh, right, said Hermione.
And then some more of those bluebell flames that have been mentioned twice before.
Yes.
And the plant tries to get away from it, thus mm-hmm. loosening its grip on the boys, and they get away.
Yes. So they go into another room. And this happens to be what we find out is Professor Flitwick's room.
Well, they think that there's birds flying around in the room.
Yes.
And Harry notices that they're glittering.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're not birds, they're flying keys.
And there are brooms there as well.
Yes. And so they figure out that they have to catch it. And then Ron examines the lock and is like, oh, we need an aged silver key. So they fly around.
Yes.
It is Ron. So they I literally read it earlier today.
I'm not going to argue with you. Shoot.
So they all fly around and Harry with the Eye of the Seeker. That's what we're calling that ability.
I was going to say Eye of the Tiger, but okay.
Eye of the Seeker.
Okay.
Finds an old silver key with one of its wings looking all frumpy and stuff. So
it had been roughly shoved into the door.
As if it had been caught once already.
Yes. And they come up with a plan and
for basically Ron to dive down towards it, Hermione to shoot up at it to sort of get it not. So it can't really go up and down too much.
Yes.
It has to stay within a certain level. And then Harry
catches it. With one of his hands against the wall. He's like,
yes. Psh. Yeah. So he grabs it and then flies to the door, jams it in, and unlocks the door. So
yes.
Easy. So that was. So obviously, Professor Sprouts was the first one, and mm-hmm. I was on Flitwick because he's charmed the keys to fly.
So next. I mean, I just want to say something before we get there.
What's up?
So this task seemed perfect for Harry. Right? Because he's the Seeker, and
well,
I mean,
that one seems easier for Harry, but the first one has nothing to do with any of his
right,
aptitude.
But that's kind of, the first one seems like it's just luck.
Well, like, it seems like if you pay attention
to Hagrid.
This is the one that, like, confuses me. So Fluffy is, like, the only variable in all of this,
mm-hmm.
But they seem like tasks that first years can actually do.
I know, that's what I have right
like,
here.
The first years are taught what Devil's Snare is. So you're telling me an 11-year-old would be able to get through the second challenge, quote unquote.
I have here, come to think, the last one seemed perfectly fit for any first year. What is going on with these teachers who are set to protect this really valuable stone?
Why not, like, here's a mandrake.
They haven't learned about those yet.
Yeah, it's like there's like roots and all that stuff, and it's like to pass the door, you have to uproot this plant, and you pick it up, it's a mandrake, and you're dead. So you have to have things, yes. You have to recognize what it is.
Yeah.
Like something that not a first year can do.
Right?
That makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
So the second one, or the third one, isn't necessarily too difficult either, because it's just catch this key. I mean, yeah, you have to be good with a broom, and first year aren't supposed to be on a Quidditch team, but they have a flying lesson.
Yes. So
they're taught to fly. So with even like a modicum of skill, a first year can be able to catch this key.
I am perplexed at how these teachers think that these are adequate enough protections for this very valuable stone.
Yes. Okay, so they have the next one. And they come across a giant chessboard with pieces, you know, in their appropriate spots. And Ron asks one of the pieces if they have to play to get across, which the piece nods. So Ron takes the place of a knight.
Yes.
Hermione is a rook.
Or castle, yes.
And Harry is a bishop?
Yes, I have it written in there, and you got it right without even looking. Good job.
I want to use my brain.
Okay. And this is clearly Professor McGonagall's thing, because she transfigured these giant things into chess pieces.
Which for me,
wizard's chess.
I've always thought it was weird, because that should be a charm. You're charming something to have another attribute, which is to mimic life. To follow these certain rules. You're not changing them necessarily.
But what if she changed it from something else? Maybe it's like house elves?
No.
Or goblins? Or
but
some
what it
other
says
creature?
Specifically in the book is that, oh, this is totally McGonagall's because she transfigured them to be alive. And it's like, no, that's a charm, really.
I can see it, though. I can see
like,
it
here are keys. I'm going to give them wings so they can fly. That would be hers, not Flitwick's.
But I will tell you that McGonagall is also known for being really, really good at charms. So it makes sense that
that's
she would
fine.
Transfigure something into something else and then bring them to life. Because she also... Don't do it. But it makes sense if you think, okay, I won't say it, but I'm going to say it to you.
But if you had said that the flying keys was McGonagall's, that would have made perfect
sense.
But
remember that Flitwick and McGonagall have that.
No, I understand.
Where they're kind of each other.
I understand, but I also hate the fact that it's definitely the flying keys is Flitwick's and the chess is McGonagall's, because if you reverse them, like I said, it'd make complete sense. She transfigured the keys to have wings, to be more bird-like. Okay.
Okay.
That's hers. And then Flitwick charmed the chess pieces to have these rules,
but
to be lifelike,
to
follow
the... But they couldn't make giant chess pieces out of anywhere. They would have had to have... I think that's the train of thought. That they couldn't had giant chess pieces from out of nowhere, so she had to transfigure something into something else.
Wizards have everything.
I know, but this is the train of thought that I think happened for that.
No,
but
I'm
get
sure.
why it doesn't make sense to you sometimes.
It will forever be one of those things where I'm like, okay, I get it, but also if it was reversed, it'd make more sense.
Okay. So Ron is actually he's really phenomenal at wizard's chess. So he's actually able to figure this out fairly well, and he plays a masterful game.
Yeah, where
or match,
he's taking as many pieces as he's losing, because he's taking the command as the knight, which for me is weird. Just be the king, idiot. But okay.
But the king doesn't move as much, so it makes
true.
Sense
he
to
gets
me
he gets a better vantage point for what's actually happening on the board.
Yes. So, and if you didn't realize, Al and I actually kind of sort of understand the rules of chess, so we can kind of figure out why it is the way it is.
I mean, I thoroughly understand it.
Yeah.
understanding chess and being good at chess are two different, vastly yes, different things. They're different worlds.
Which is why I said that we understand chess.
Yeah, I know.
I would kind of be screwed in this one because I haven't played in a very long time.
I think it'd be okay.
Well, considering that all of these tasks seemed...
Gauged for 11-year-olds,
I think we'd be fine.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, again, they're taking as many pieces as they're losing, and then Ron realizes that he has to sacrifice himself to win the game.
So that Harry can win.
Yeah. Well, that they can win.
Yes.
The entire group can win.
Yes.
So the thing is, I mean, Harry and Ron, or Harry and Hermione, rather, don't want him to sacrifice himself, but he has to, and he knows he does, and he ends up doing it so Harry can...
In the movie. But you can't!
Yeah. But you can't! But he has to, so it happens.
Yeah.
He gets... It's so... This I'm going to bring this up in the next episode we're recording in a couple of hours because we're going to do the comparison between the movie and the book.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we'll do it, like, tomorrow. Okay, so we're doing it tomorrow. But
I'll be here tomorrow.
In the movie, it's she stabs the horse, the queen, and Ron falls. Whereas in the book, she literally, like, backhands him with her stone arm... The bat around his head.
Yeah.
She literally walloped him to the floor. It's vastly different. Like, I would be frightened for my friend in the book. And then we'd be like, get up. What do you do? You fell.
Yeah.
You fell like 5 feet. You're fine.
You're okay.
Whereas a stone statue just like...
Backhanded him.
Yeah. It was great. So, checkmate. Harry wins.
Yes. And then they go on to the next room, which we find out is Professor Quirrell's, because there's an unconscious troll laying on the floor.
So that was a fairly easy test.
Yeah, and I mean, that's convenient, also reminiscent of...
What happened earlier. We've shown that 11-year-olds can take out a troll.
Two of them can take out a full-grown
and this
troll.
This time they still have two, but it would have been three.
It would have been three, but, you know.
Yeah.
So on
to the next room.
Yes.
Is a table with vials on top of it.
Can I read it?
Read it.
Okay. So there's a scroll and it says, "Danger lies before you, while safety lies behind. Two of us will help you, whichever you would find. One among us seven will let you move ahead. Another will transport the drinker back instead. Two among our numbers hold only nettle wine. Three of us are killers, waiting hidden in line. Choose, unless you wish to stay here forevermore. To help you in your choice, we give you these clues four. First, however slyly the poison tries to hide, you will always find some on nettle wine's left side. Second, different are those who stand at either end, but if you would move onward, neither is your friend. Third, as you see clearly, all are different size. Neither dwarf nor giant holds death in their insides. Fourth, the second left and the second on the right are twins once you taste them, though different at first sight."
Indeed.
I love it.
So it's not magic. It's a logic puzzle, which... Not you.
That's me. That's my...
Enough with the things with your watch.
That's my laundry alarm.
You're extra. So...
Okay.
Yeah. It's just logic, which apparently wizards lack in heaps.
Yeah.
Because when you have magic to do everything for you, it makes sense that kind of logic falls to the wayside.
Yes. And Hermione's like, this is brilliant.
Yeah, so she figures it out.
Mm-hmm.
If... She thinks for, you know, a couple of minutes and, oh, look, it's this one.
Yeah.
This one will get us forward, this one will get us back, but the one that gets us forward is only enough for a single mouthful, so only one person can advance.
Let's also note that as soon as they walk into the room, there are purple flames behind them and black flames in front of them. So they need to get through whichever flames they're trying to get through. So that's kind of why they have to drink the potion to be able to get through. So Harry instructs Hermione to drink the one that will allow her to head back through the purple flames.
So she can save Ron.
and hopefully send an owl to Dumbledore to get him back.
Yes.
And that Harry's going to drink the one to move ahead through the black flames and into the final room, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And boy, is he surprised at who he sees.
Well, no, there's a little exchange that's very, very important, yes. I think. So you read Hermione's bit, and I'll read Harry's. We'll do a thing.
Okay, hold on. Where are we starting?
I'll start it with her name.
Hermione turns that one.
No.
Where? Oh, Hermione. Okay. Yeah.
Why are you saying my line?
Okay, take two. Go.
Hermione.
Harry, you're a great wizard, you know.
I'm not as good as you, said Harry, very embarrassed, as she let go of him.
Me? Said Hermione. Books and cleverness. There are more important things. Friendship and bravery. And, oh, Harry, be careful.
You drink first, said Harry. You are sure which is which, aren't you?
Positive, said Hermione. She took a long drink from the round bottle at the end and shuddered.
It's not poison, said Harry anxiously.
No, but it's like ice.
Quick, go, before it wears off.
Good luck. Take care.
Go.
Yes.
Are we done? And then, yeah.
All right.
As Jen said, the person who's waiting in the final room isn't anyone that Harry was expecting. Not Snape, not Voldemort, but someone else.
And now...
We do chapter 17, The Man with Two Faces.
Yes.
Which I think is a great chapter title.
I agree with you.
None of them, all of them are really great. Like they're all fantastic. Like, so the person who was waiting was Quirrell.
Dun dun dun.
I don't know why I just.
I don't know
either. But I did.
So Quirrell was standing in front of him. Quirrell tells Harry, surprisingly without a stutter, I have to add, that although Severus Snape seems the type. It was him all along.
Next to him, who would suspect poor stuttering Professor Quirrell? Professor.
Two-piece. Yes. We also find out that it was Quirrell, not Snape, who tried to curse the broom in Harry's first Quidditch match.
Yeah. That Hermione had knocked him over as she was trying to stop Snape, quote unquote, from... You know, to try and break the eye contact to save Harry.
But Snape was actually uttering the counter curse to try to save Harry's life.
Mm-hmm. Snape was trying to save me? Of course. Why do you think he wanted to referee your next match? He was trying to make sure I didn't do it again. Funny, really. He needn't have bothered. I couldn't do anything with Dumbledore waiting. And of course, all the other teachers are sort of against Snape because... He's against Gryffindor winning and is super against them, but, you know.
And he's always finding reasons to take points away from Gryffindor for all kinds of weird things. Like, oh, you breathe too loud. Or maybe, I don't know, you accidentally looked at me for too long.
Meh. Yeah. So, that attitude transfers to the Quidditch game, which, okay, whatever, we know that the whole... That whole thing, we've already gone over it.
Yeah.
But.
So, I actually have written here a line that I think is super important. You're too nosy to live, Potter. Scurrying around the school on Halloween like that, for all I knew, you'd seen me coming to look at what was guarding the stone. You let the troll in? So, was he planning to kill Harry from the very beginning? Like, why would that be his plan?
No, I don't think he was from the very beginning. It's when Harry, again, starts snooping. When Harry, like, oh, you're too nosy, was the whole trying to stop the troll. And
yeah.
He witnessed this sort of thing happen. So, true.
And then Quirrell snaps his fingers, and Harry is wrapped tightly in ropes that appear out of thin air. Nonverbal magic?
Even it's like beyond that, he's not holding his wand.
Yeah, that's what I have written down here. So
could be
Quirrell must be super powerful.
Well, no one knows what nonverbal magic is at this point, mm-hmm. So let's not harp on it too much. But okay. It's very interesting that he doesn't need to necessarily use his wand. to cast some magic.
That's really what I'm aiming at. Like, he just goes like this, and then Harry is bound. Mm-hmm. Harry notices something behind Quirrell. What's he notice?
The Mirror of Erised.
Dun dun dun!
This mirror is the key to finding the stone. So apparently the mirror is the key. He says it.
But it's a mirror, so how can it be a key?
Well, something to do with it. Apparently, we've gone through all the teachers that are the important ones, because, I mean, there's an astrology test?
No, a divination test.
Guess the future. Everyone fails. So... So this is Dumbledore's test now.
Yep.
The Mirror of Erised. Quirrell looks into it and sees himself getting the stone and presenting it to his master, but how does he get it?
So Harry decides that he's gotta distract Quirrell from the mirror. So he keeps questioning him, and Quirrell actually says he's serving Lord Voldemort.
Well, it's like a long line of questioning.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I saw you and Snape in the forest, and yes, but, you know, at that time he was trying to find out how far I'd got. He suspected me all along, trying to frighten me, as though he could when I had Lord Voldemort on my side.
Ugh. And then we find out that Snape hates Harry. Because of Harry's father?
They hated each other at school. They loathed each other at school.
When they were younger. And now that's where their hatreds for each other started. And I actually have it written, ha-ha, aha, there it is. This is the reason Snape is a complete jerk to Harry from day one. Snape hates Harry's father. But Harry's father is dead. So this shouldn't be a thing, right? Like... any normal adult or average adult would be like, oh, the person I hated is gone. Why am I going to treat their child like crap? But apparently Snape is a jerk. Anyway, moving on.
But I heard you a few days ago, sobbing. I thought Snape was threatening you. For the first time, a spasm of fear flitted across Quirrell's face. Sometimes, he said, I find it hard to follow my master's instructions. He is a great wizard, and I am weak. You mean he was there in the classroom with you? Harry gasped. He is with me wherever I go, said Quirrell quietly. I met him when I traveled around the world. A foolish young man I was then, full of ridiculous ideas about good and evil. Lord Voldemort showed me how wrong I was.
Oh, I think this is the first time we hear him called Lord Voldemort.
Yes.
Instead of just Voldemort.
Yeah. There is no good and evil. There is only power and those too weak to seek it. Since then, I have served him faithfully, although I have let him down many times. He has had to be very hard on me. Quirrell shivered suddenly. He does not forgive mistakes easily. When I failed to steal the stone from Gringotts, he was most displeased. He punished me, decided he would have to keep a closer watch on me. So Harry's remembering the trip and all that, and Quirrell's cursing under his breath trying to figure out what to do. I don't understand. Is a stone inside the mirror? Should I break it?
So he pleads for help from his master to get the stone, and a voice that seems to come from Quirrell himself tells him to use the boy.
Use the boy.
Harry is commanded to look into the mirror.
Well, to come here.
Come here.
Clap of his hands.
And the ropes fall off.
Yeah. And then Harry is again commanded, and he comes over and looks into the mirror.
And Harry instantly knows he has to lie no matter what he sees.
Mm-hmm.
He sees his reflection smile back at him, pulled the stone out of his pocket, and put it back in. And Harry feels the stone dropping into his pocket.
Into his real pocket.
Yes. So he tells Quirrell that he sees himself shaking hands with Dumbledore, having just won the Quidditch, the House Cup for Gryffindor, right? And the high, terrible voice tells Quirrell that Harry is lying. And after the voice demands to speak to Harry face to face, Quirrell takes off his turban. So it's like, no, Master, you're not strong enough. And he's like, no, I'm going to do this. The turban falls away, and Quirrell slowly turns around on what should have been the back of Quirrell's head.
Harry would have screamed, but he couldn't make a sound. Where there should have been a back to Quirrell's head, there was a face, the most terrible face Harry had ever seen. It was chalk white with glaring red eyes and slits for nostrils like a snake. Harry Potter, it whispered.
So Harry realizes that he is staring at the face of Voldemort, who has to share a body with Quirrell to live. That is so creepy.
Yeah, and the unicorn blood that Quirrell has been drinking from has strengthened him these past few weeks.
Quirrell was drinking unicorn blood. Like, did he have to...
Yeah. And once I have the elixir of life, I will be able to create a body of my own. Now, why don't you give me that stone in your pocket?
He knew. And this is one of those things that... This is one of those times that I am 100% convinced that I really, really, really don't like Voldemort. Because he's a pathological liar. He tries to convince Harry that...
Murder wasn't enough?
No.
Okay.
It's logic like that
makes Ted Bundy so appealing to stupid people. I'm just saying. You're not stupid. I'm just saying that.
So he tries to convince Harry that, join me and we can bring your parents back. And it's like...
Well, no, he does that in the movie. He doesn't do that in the
book. No, he does do this here.
How touching. I always value bravery. Yes, no, boy. Your parents were brave.
Before
that. Don't be a fool, snarled the face. Better save your own life and join me, or you'll meet the same end as your parents. They died begging me for mercy. He didn't promise to bring his parents. He did in the movie.
I was remembering different things.
The movie.
But the thing that bothers me also is that he lies about Harry's parents begging for their lives. And Harry's like, you're a liar.
He actually
screams liar.
Mm-hmm.
And Voldemort laughs and is like, yeah, you're right. They didn't actually beg for their lives. Your dad was brave, and your mom didn't need to die.
I killed your father first, and he put up a courageous fight, which... Anyway.
Yeah.
But your mother needn't have died. She was trying to protect you. Now give me the stone, unless you want her to have died in vain.
So you go, Harry, calling him on his crap.
Never.
And I think it's really impressive that he is an 11-year-old basically standing up to... the darkest wizard ever.
Yep.
Okay.
So then Voldemort tells Quirrell to seize him, to seize Harry, because he has a stone and all that stuff. So they have a bit of a tussle.
Yes.
But the second Quirrell touches Harry, his hands start...
His skin. Because he's still able to grab onto Harry.
Well, you can grab his clothes, but when it's skin-to-skin contact, his skin starts to burn, almost.
It boils.
It goes... What is it exactly on?
It burns Quirrell and causes him to have boils all over. Ugh. Which makes sense. It's kind of like a second or third degree burn. Like, just touching him causes him to blister over.
Here it says, Harry could see they looked burnt, raw, red, and shiny.
Yeah. Oh, I have that. It says, Master, I cannot hold him. My hands! And Quirrell, though pinning Harry to the ground with his knees, let go of his neck and stared, bewildered, at his own palms. Harry could see they looked burned, raw, red, and shiny. Then kill him, fool, and be done, screeched Voldemort. Quirrell raised his hand to perform a deadly curse, but Harry, by instinct, reached up and grabbed Quirrell's face. So he grabs his face and then his arms and holds on as tightly as he can, while the blinding pain in his head keeps building.
Mm-hmm.
And then he feels Quirrell's arm wrenched away from him, and he blacks out, convinced that all is lost.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Harry.
So he slowly starts to come back to consciousness with something gold right above him. tries to reach for it, and he thinks it's the snitch. Mm-hmm. So he tries to catch it, but his arms are too heavy. He blinks, and it's not a snitch at all. It's a pair of glasses. So he blinks again, and he's looking up into the smiling face of Albus Dumbledore. Yeah. Good afternoon, Harry.
Yes. So I actually have it listed out because mm-hmm. there's a lot of stuff that gets unpacked in this mm-hmm. couple of pages. So we find out almost immediately, one after the other, Quirrell doesn't have the stone. Because Harry is like, oh my gosh, Quirrell, we need to make sure that he doesn't have the stone. And Dumbledore's like, don't worry, he doesn't.
Well, it's a little more complicated. Dumbledore kind of drags that point out a little bit.
Yeah,
and Okay, so he goes, Quirrell does not have the stone. Then who does, sir? I, Harry, please relax.
Yeah, so...
Or Madame Pomfrey will have me thrown out.
Yeah.
And then Harry looks around and notices that there's, like, mountains of sweets around him.
And he asks how long he's been out, and we find out that Harry has been unconscious in the hospital wing for 3 days.
Well, I'm...
Yeah, it says it.
It does. Okay. But it's more of, you know, you're, like, brushing through everything.
I'm trying to get through the important parts. It takes two sentences. Oh, my goodness.
So, all the sweets are tokens from friends and admirers. What happened down in the dungeon between you and Professor Quirrell is a complete secret, so naturally the whole school knows. So, Fred and George try to send him a lavatory seat, which, if you remember, at the beginning of the book, his mom actually mentions it and says... Oh, you know, trying to send someone or do something with a toilet seat. And he's like, we've never done that, but good idea. Thanks,
exploding
Mom.
Exploding a toilet.
Yeah. No, I don't think it was exploding a toilet. It was something similar, but I don't think it was exactly that.
Whatever. It's fine. You're going to look for it and I'm going to keep going.
Okay.
Harry asks if Dumbledore had come back because of Hermione's owl. And he's like, no, it seems like we might have crossed paths, but I managed to make it in time to save you. And Harry's like, what? I'm glad you got here on time. And he's like, no, dude, the whole thing almost killed you. And the stone, we find out that the stone has been destroyed. This, of course, means that Nicholas Flamel and his wife, Perronel, will die, but not for a while. They have enough to sort out their affairs. And Harry's like, oh no. And then Dumbledore says, to one as young as you, I'm sure it seems incredible, but to Nicholas and Perronel, it really is like going to bed after a very, very long day. After all, to the well-organized mind, death is but the next great adventure. You know, the stone was really not such a wonderful thing. As much money and life as you could want, the two things most human beings would choose above all. The trouble is, humans do have a knack of choosing precisely those things that are worst for them. And we've also find out that although Voldemort didn't get the stone, he's not really gone. Do you want to read this one, or should it's a long one, or do you want
to? Which one are we going exactly?
Sir, said Harry, I've been thinking.
I'll just sit here.
Okay.
Sorry, I was looking for the thing and I'm an idiot.
No,
you're not. Sir, said Harry, I've been thinking. Sir, even if the stone's gone, you know who? Call him Voldemort, Harry. Always use the proper name for things. Fear of a name increases fear of the thing itself.
I feel like I want to write that on everything.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Well, Voldemort's going to try other ways of coming back, isn't he? I mean, he isn't gone, has he? No, Harry, he is not. He is still out there somewhere, perhaps looking for another body to share. Not being truly alive, he cannot be killed. He left Quirrell to die. He shows just as little mercy to his followers as his enemies. Nevertheless, Harry, while you may have only delayed his return to power, it will merely take someone else who is prepared to fight what seems a losing battle next time, and if he is delayed again and again, why, he may never return to power.
Deep stuff.
Yes.
We also find out why Quirrell couldn't touch Harry. Your mother died to save you. If there's one thing Voldemort cannot understand, it is love. He didn't realize that love is as love as powerful as your mother's for you leaves its own mark. No, not a scar, no visible sign. To have been loved so deeply, even though the person who loved us is gone, will give us some protection forever. It is in your very skin. Quirrell, full of hatred, greed, and ambition, sharing his soul with Voldemort, could not touch you for this reason. It was agony to touch a person marked by something so good. And we also find out why Snape treats Harry like crap. More evidence.
Quirrell said Snape, Professor Snape, Harry. Yes, him. Quirrell said he hates me because he hated my father. Is that true? Well, they did rather detest each other, not unlike yourself and Mr. Malfoy. And then your father did something Snape could never forgive. What? He saved his life. What? Yes, said Dumbledore dreamily. Funny the way people's minds work, isn't it? Professor Snape couldn't bear being in your father's debt. I do believe he worked so hard to protect you this year because he felt that would make him and your father even. Then he could go back to hating your father's memory in peace.
Okay, I get it, I guess, but I still don't think it's okay.
Yes. Well, shortly after, Dumbledore departs.
Yes.
And Harry takes quite a bit to convince Madame Pomfrey to let Ron and Hermione in to visit him.
And she's like, they can come in for 5 minutes.
Yes. So Ron and Hermione break the news to Harry that Slytherin has won the House Cup. And because Harry was unable to play in the championship Quidditch match, Ravenclaw easily won it.
So before they get forced out by Madame Pomfrey, Harry actually explains everything that's happened.
Yeah.
And he says that they're the perfect audience, gasping and eyeing at the right times. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful because, I mean, everybody wants a good audience when they tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
Next we get Hagrid, and he is distraught.
Well, he comes in and he's okay.
Yes.
Sits down, looks at Harry, and bursts into tears.
Yeah, because
he blames himself.
Yeah, he's like, you could have died. And Harry's like, all right, I'm fine. And it was Voldemort. He would have figured out another way to get the information.
Yeah.
And he's like, don't say the name. And
he just says it like, oh, you know, Voldemort this. And Hagrid is still apologetic and then says, don't say the name. And then Harry shouts it at him.
And he's like, I've met him. He tried to kill me. I'm going to call him by his name. And then Hagrid is like shocked back into that moment. And he gives Harry a super treasured gift.
Yeah, that he took the day off with Dumbledore's allowance, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it's a scrapbook full of pictures of Harry's parents.
And we know that in the wizarding world, pictures move. So I think that that is fantastic. Anyway, so Hagrid leaves because Madame Pomfrey's like, you're my patient, go to sleep. So he goes to sleep, and the next day is the great feast at the end of the year, and Harry's like, I really, really want to go. Can I go? She's like, well, Dumbledore said you can go, but she seems really hesitant to let him go, like somehow she knows more than Dumbledore.
She's the nurse. Of course she knows.
Yeah. So there we go. End of term feast, and take it away.
Let me lean in close to get this going. Because I'm in my recliner right now because I decided to move during one of our pauses because we keep getting interrupted. Love that. Okay. Another year gone, Dumbledore said cheerfully. Well, another year gone.
that was a little bit more cheerful. Good job.
Dumbledore said cheerfully, and I must trouble you with an old man's wheezing waffle before we sink our teeth into our delicious feast. What a year it has been. Hopefully your heads are all a little fuller than they were. You have the whole summer ahead to get them nice and empty before next year starts. Now, as I understand it, the House Cup here needs awarding, and the points stand thus. In fourth place, Gryffindor, with 312 points. In third, Hufflepuff, with 352. Ravenclaw have 426, In Slytherin, 472. A storm of cheering and stamping broke out from the Slytherin table. Harry could see Draco Malfoy banging his goblet on the table. It was a sickening sight. Yes, yes, well done, Slytherin, said Dumbledore. However, recent events must be taken into account. The room went very still. The Slytherin smiles faded a little. I actually just did it. I cleared my throat.
Good job.
Said Dumbledore. I have a few last-minute points to dish out. Let me see. Yes. First, to Mr. Ronald Weasley. Ron went purple in the face. He looked like a radish with bad sunburn.
I love it.
The best-played game of chess Hogwarts has seen in many years, I award Gryffindor House 50 points.
Ooh.
Gryffindor cheers nearly raised the bewitched ceiling. The stars overhead seemed to quiver. Percy could be heard telling the other prefects, "My brother, you know, my youngest brother, got past McGonagall's giant chess set." At last, there was silence again. Second, to Miss Hermione Granger, for the use of cool logic in the face of fire, I award Gryffindor House 50 points. Hermione buried her face in her arms. Harry strongly suspected she had burst into tears. Gryffindors up and down the table were beside themselves. They were 100 points up. Third, to Mr. Harry Potter, said Dumbledore. The room went deadly quiet. For pure nerve and outstanding courage, I award Gryffindor House 60 points. The din was deafening. Those who could add up while yelling themselves hoarse knew that Gryffindor now had 472 points, exactly the same as Slytherin. They had drawn for the House Cup. If only Dumbledore had given Harry just one more point. Dumbledore raised his hand. The room gradually fell silent.
Can I read this one?
Yes, yes.
There are all kinds of courage, said Dumbledore, smiling. It takes a great deal of bravery to stand up to our enemies, but just as much to stand up to our friends. I think even more. I therefore award 10 points to Mr. Neville Longbottom. Yay!
Yeah.
I mean, that really helps, you know? So, you know, not to belabor it anymore.
So,
which means
Dumbledore called over the storm of applause for even Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff were celebrating the downfall of Slytherin. We need a little change of decoration. He clapped his hands. In an instant, the green hangings became scarlet and the silver became gold. The huge Slytherin serpent vanished and a towering Gryffindor lion took its place.
Rawr.
Yes. Snape was shaking Professor McGonagall's hand with a horrible forced smile. He caught Harry's eye.
Hi, Harry.
And Harry knew at once that Snape's feelings towards him hadn't changed one jot. What?
Not one bit. I know, that's what that means.
I know, but I love that.
Okay.
I want to use that. Okay.
You're not British.
How dare you tell me what I can and can't say in my book?
I mean, you totally can, but you're not British.
In indignation. Okay.
Okay.
So that was it.
Okay.
The feast ended.
I just want to say that it actually says in the book, it was the best evening of Harry's life. Better than winning at Quidditch or Christmas or knocking out mountain trolls. He would never, ever forget tonight. I'm so happy he has a good night. I mean... Honestly, Harry's had a pretty rough few days.
Yeah.
You know, almost dying and all. So it's always good to be able to have some time.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, this is great.
So after the feast, I'm not sure if it's that night or the next day, but wherever it may be, to their great surprise, Harry and Ron passed with good marks.
Everybody passed.
Yes. Of course, Hermione, top of the year.
Yes.
Neville scraped by with his outstanding herbology grade in general.
And even Crab somehow managed to make it through.
Which I'm pretty sure Snape was just like, it's fine, just go.
We'll give you 5 points for being able to write your name correctly, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It wasn't Crab, it was Goyle.
Oh, Goyle. Yeah. For me, they're interchangeable.
Yes, this is true.
Okay.
So?
Soon their trunks are all packed.
Wardrobe's empty, gone. Trunks packed.
Yeah. And they have to take the Hogwarts Express back towards the Muggle world.
Before they go, they're given a card that tells them not to use magic outside of school, which Fred, I think it is.
Yeah.
I always hope they'll forget to give us these, said Fred Weasley sadly.
Yeah, they won't ever forget, especially not yours. Yes. They might as well tattoo it on your hand at that point.
So Hagrid is the one who gets them back to the Hogwarts Express. The first years again cross the lake out. So I think it's really nice coming in on the boat where you'd have no idea what's happening, leaving, and just happy.
Yeah.
Like, well, for the most part, I feel like most students are happy to leave because they get to be with their families again and, you know, kind of show off what they learned theoretically because they can't actually use magic. But, like, it's nice.
Or they're not supposed to.
Well, technically they can.
They're not.
And their parents are on the hook for it.
Yes.
So.
So they make their way back and you know. We have our trio, and they're super happy.
They're eating Birdie Bot's every flavor beans back on their way. They change out of their robes into their Muggle clothes, and they groups in two or three are leaving platform 9 3/4 back to the main hub of King's Cross Station.
Yeah, because of course you can't have all of the students coming out of a wall.
Yeah.
Muggles would notice.
Yeah, so waiting for them is Mrs. Weasley with Ginny. And Uncle Vernon.
Ugh. So
this is... I'm going to go over their exchange very briefly after Jen says what she has to say.
I was going to say it, so go ahead.
Oh. Oh, go for it then. Do Molly and I'll do Vernon. Never mind, just do it all.
Actually, sorry. I was going to... I was going to speed over the exchange with Molly, but I won't.
No, speed over.
So basically, he's... Ginny's like, oh, look, it's Harry Potter. Mom, I can see him. And Ginny and Mrs. Weasley's like, don't be rude.
Yeah.
Don't point. That's not okay.
And Harry thanks her for the Christmas gifts.
It's like 7 months too late, almost.
I mean.
But he's 11, have wrote her a letter, so whatever.
Gosh.
I get it. He could have sent his owl, but whatever. And then, Uncle Vernon is there. And Mrs. Weasley's like, oh, you must be Harry's family. And Vernon's like, in a matter of speaking, I guess. Really? Where did it go? I missed it.
We're looking for.
Oh, and it says, already are you? Blah, blah, blah. Harry hung back for a last word with Ron and Hermione. See you over the summer then. Hope you have a good holiday, said Hermione. Looking uncertainly after Uncle Vernon, shocked that anyone could be so unpleasant. I mean, I'm not shocked. Oh, I will, said Harry, and they were surprised at the grin that was spreading over his face. They don't know we're not allowed to use magic at home. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of fun with Dudley this summer.
Yep.
The end. Fiend.
Yes. So, closing thoughts. Magical world, magical book. Writing superb.
Magical me.
Gosh. Anyway. book is great. Story's great. World is great. Characters are fantastic. I mean, there are a couple of odd points in the book. I can't think of them off the top of my head. We can make a video about it. Or a video. We can make a podcast about it some other time.
Yeah.
About some of the odd things. I think the biggest one is they finish their exams in the afternoon. And magically it's nighttime and now they have to go and protect the stone.
Save the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like magically 6 hours vanished. Like, well, why did Snape wait is my question. He's a teacher. He's allowed on the third floor corridor.
Yes, but well, he also...
I mean, in terms of the story, because obviously we found out that he's not after the stone. But why would... Then, realistically... Why did Quirrell wait? Why didn't Quirrell just wait, go by the corridor, or walk back and forth? Was Snape just on guard duty the entire time until night? And if so, why didn't he just wait the entire night until Dumbledore got back?
Because Snape sucks.
He's not that stupid, though. Neither is Dumbledore.
I don't
know. Exactly. It's one of those things that is kind of like weird and open-ended, and you're kind of just like, but why?
Yeah.
There's a couple of those throughout the book, but overall, it's very tight. It's very...
It's a well-written story.
Yeah.
With good characters, And by good, I mean well fleshed out characters.
Yeah.
Characters that you can actually either love or love to hate.
Yep. But...
Because we use the word good and it's not operationally defined. And my version of good may not be your version of good. So we have to give you an explanation. They're good characters because they are whole characters.
Every character is individual. Every character never breaks away from what is previously established unless there's a moment of growth.
Mm-hmm.
So realistically, it's a great book. It's well written. The characters are well written. That's it. There's nothing really to fault the book on besides the weird inconsistency with the points being given and deducted in the two scenes, the troll versus being out late at night, which I can sort of rationalize, but I still don't go with.
I'm not okay with it.
Yeah.
That's the one time in the entire series that I'm like, oh my God, well, really? Really? Really?
Yeah.
Every other time I'm like, okay, I am 100% behind you. That is the one instance where I'm like, nah, bro, that's not cool. And yeah. I did just call McGonagall bro.
You're a little crazy. A
little bit. She would definitely not approve.
So, that's that. The next podcast is going to be a comparison between the movie and the book. We're going to bring up what was left out, what was included randomly, or was added unnecessarily. And that's about it. Because yeah. There's a lot of things that were cut out. Like, Peeves is not in the movie. Not in the entire franchise. Peeves doesn't exist.
Poor Peeves.
Because Peeves is great.
There's other people who aren't in it either.
Yeah, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Whatever. We don't need to go there right now. That's all we've got. And
yes.
Al looks like he's about to fall asleep, so we're done.
Social media. Facebook.
Yes.
Instagram.
Facebook. Facebook page. Facebook group. Instagram. We're on Podbean. Hopefully this is where you're listening. And if you're not, you're probably listening either on Spotify or iTunes. We love you either way. I mean, enjoy.
And the thing is that because the group is so small right now, because we're still growing, like, Jen and I are very attentive to what's posted, and we kind of, like, reply instantly. So that is, a big benefit to right now joining our community and getting into it.
Not for nothing, but somebody posted last night, was it? Or earlier today?
It might have been earlier today.
And within 2 minutes, both of us had responded.
I literally responded within 10 seconds.
Oh, no, you were responding and I was responding. I was giving us two minutes because I didn't want to make us seem like we were all
on it. We had our phones in hand anyway. And I got the notification, told you. You're like, oh, wow.
Yes. So we were all up on it.
Yes. So our attentiveness is top notch. Get on it.
Yes.
So, we'll see you there. Oh, wait, our next owl. That's the thing that we say.
Yes, over and out.